Okay, we're in lesson 9, page 64 is where we're going to be picking up, talking about fulfilled prophecy, this lesson and then the next lesson, well actually the rest of the book, about fulfilled prophecy. And we introduced it a little bit last week, the nation of Egypt, one of the great nations of the world, one of the oldest nations of the world. It is a nation that is intertwined in the scheme of redemption. Everything about Egypt is contained in the story of redemption. Moses' name is actually, we don't even know what his real name is. Moses is his Egyptian name that he got when he was weaned, so we don't even know what his Hebrew name is. And I think that that's just a, kind of a contrast that God is always showing, that Egypt is a part of this story about the redemption of man. But there's also a prophecy about Egypt, and we're going to talk about that. We talked a little bit about it Wednesday night, because when we talk about Egypt, we're talking about a powerful nation, one of the most powerful nations in the world, not only because of military might, but because of economics, because they were the literal breadbasket of the world in their day. So, in the story of Joseph, you remember, the son of Jacob that was cast out into Egypt, how much grain did Egypt have under the leadership of Joseph according to Genesis 41? Like the sands of the sea. Yeah, that's a lot of grain. I mean, that is a pile of grain. Plentiful years, the ground brought forth abundantly, grain as the sand of the sea. It was immeasurable. Now you remember that what got Joseph out of prison? How did Joseph get out of prison? I'm sorry?
He could interpret dreams.
Yeah, he could interpret dreams. And who had a dream that needed to be interpreted? Pharaoh. So Pharaoh had this dream, weird dreams, you know how dreams are weird, about the skinny cows and the fat cows, and the skinny cows ate the fat cows and then stalks the grain. And so he said, okay, I interpreted this, and basically it was going to be 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. And so because of that, Pharaoh elevated Joseph. And so he became in charge. He was second in command of the whole nation. And so for 7 years, they didn't do anything but gather grain, 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 and built big, huge monster. We have found, they have found some of these granaries that are just massive containers. And so they did that for 7 years. And then when the famine came, they had something to eat. And that, of course, was in the province of God, that because of the famine that was in the land, Jacob sent his sons to Egypt to get some food, and the whole story you know that came up there. But the point of it is that, the famine was in all the lands. It was over all the face of the earth. And in Egypt, there was just everything you wanted. So that was by the providence of God. So that's important, because in the history of Egypt, when you read about the history of Egypt, they are just an incredible nation. Now, we didn't add this in there, but it's sort of part of it. When we talk about the 10 plagues, one of the things that we have to remember happened in the 10 plagues is that the 10 plagues attacked every part of the nation of Israel. God basically dismantled Egypt. He attacked their gods, he attacked their military, he attacked their economy, he attacked their spirit. I mean, the plagues were just not random plagues. They were plagues that specifically attacked every part of Egypt, and God really just dismantled the whole nation because he wanted to show his power and might over them. And really, from the time that the Hebrews came out of Egypt, Egypt was going down. The period of time after that, really, they were never a great power. They were a force. Pharaoh Necho, was pretty powerful, but they were never like this. But God, having used Egypt, now was going to punish them. and because of what they did. And so with that as a backdrop of how powerful and rich and whatever Egypt was, God had something to say about that. And so in the book of Ezekiel, in chapter 29, God had some things to say about Egypt. Now, remember, time frame, the Hebrews come out of Egypt, the plagues, Egypt's kind of messed up, and then there's 40 years, and then there's the law of Moses about 1450 BC, and then the history about how that Canaan is conquered, Joshua does that, they have the period of the judges, and then the nation unites, and then they divide. Ezekiel is written, he is a prophet when they are in captivity. So we talked about Daniel and Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. They were all taken captive. Ezekiel is in that time frame, about 500 years before Jesus came. So Ezekiel is somewhat removed from the story of the deliverance from Egypt. But by this time now, not only are the children of Israel in captivity, Ezekiel is in the land, and God's got something to say. What does God say about Egypt in Ezekiel 29, verses 9 through 12? Yeah. See, and the reason that that's impactful is because utter waste, desolate. Yeah. But see, that's not Egypt. There is somewhat of a comparison, I think, when I kind of... The United States, we've talked about this, he said in prayers, the United States is a very blessed nation. We live in a nation that, you know, we got food abundance.
We feed 1 year
and 7 abroad.
I'm sorry? We feed one person here at 7 abroad in America with agriculture.
Yeah.
1 in 7.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing what we are able to do, and probably, do you think it's more now or less now? I don't know. I mean, but you go in, one of the things that's kind of shocking, if you go into a store, a grocery store of any kind, you would be shocked if you went by and saw empty shelves. I mean, you'd be like, you know. When Karen and I went to Bulgaria, that's what they had. This was right after the wall fell, and they really hadn't done a lot. But, I mean, it was shocking to go into grocery stores. And we're not talking about the time when, you know, toilet paper went out, remember, during COVID or whatever. We're talking about everything. They didn't have peanut butter. They didn't have Oreo cookies. They didn't have nothing. I mean, you walk into the store and there's literally nothing there. And what's happened is that Egypt was this great, powerful nation. We're this great, powerful nation living in prosperity. And all of a sudden, you can't grow nothing. There's no bees. I mean, there's nothing. You have become a land. I mean, the language is very important. It becomes a desolate and waste. Now, what that actually does is that it takes away their economy. Because the power of a nation is in largely part about the economy. I mean, I know we talk about the military, but let me tell you, if Egypt had a powerful military, but they didn't have any economics, forget it. Because food is necessary. And so God comes and says it's going to become a desolation and a total waste. Then he goes on in verses 14 and 15 and says that Egypt will become what kind of a kingdom? Now, why is that important? That he says it's going to be a lowly kingdom. Yeah. Number one, because they still are. But again, you're taking a nation that at one time was the powerful nation of the world. And you know, and it can happen, and I know I'm not being anti-political because I love the red, white, and blue and get all that. But if we think the United States is always going to be here, we're sadly mistaken. There's no guarantee that we're always going to be here. But the thing is that when you take a nation as powerful as Egypt and then you say to them, you are going to become a base nation. One of the reasons that I enjoy fulfilled prophecy is because we say things like that, and you can pick up the, no, they don't do that anymore, do they? Figuratively, metaphorically, you can pick up the newspaper, and when's the last time that you've heard about Egypt in the news? Like, oh, Egypt's this great, powerful nation. Oh, Egypt is, I mean, when's the last time a president, and this there's an answer to this, when is the last time a president had any interest in trying to get Egypt to do anything? Camp David, Jimmy Carter. And that was Anwar Sadat and Menachem Begin, you know, from Israel. But we mentioned this Wednesday night, we'll see this again, is that that didn't work out either. But the thing about it is that Egypt has never been a great nation since then. They will never, ever, they have never, since these days, they have never ruled over another nation. Not even close, not even in the history since then. So you look at history and you see where Egypt's been. Nah. They have never been that kind of a kingdom, and at one time they were. Yes, sir.
Well, just think about it. If you go back to when the children of Israel crossed the Red Sea and Pharaoh's complete army went after them.
Right.
They lost everything.
Yeah.
They lost their leaders and everything. And
yeah.
Besides all the plagues that they'd seen and all the destruction that happened during the plagues,
yeah,
there couldn't have been a whole lot left.
Well, and there wasn't. That's a good point, because we talk about the 10 plagues, but we forget that when the Egyptian army, with all of his chariots, chased after the Hebrews in the midst of the Red Sea, they got about halfway and God said, and wiped them out. And then it actually says that the Hebrews saw dead bodies floating in the water. It was kind of gross. But that was the final blow. And from that point on, nah. Nobody, you know, they were sort of a thorn in the flesh, you know. Matter of fact, it was Pharaoh Necho that killed Josiah, the boy at Carchemish. Yeah. But, from that took out, we got 10 plagues plus this one. But that took out the army. Okay, I got to say this. I'm going to say this just because. This goes around Facebook and upon the thing. They have found chariot wheels where the army of Egypt was. Please do not believe that. That is, that there's an actual story. I get this sometimes, even brethren send it to me. And they say, oh, they found it. The problem is where they found it is in the Gulf of Aqaba, not the Red Sea. Because in the Sinai Peninsula, you got the Red Sea over here and the Gulf of Aqaba, and they're finding, they said, they found chariot wheels over here in the Gulf of Aqaba. And it's like, read your Bible. They never crossed the Gulf of Aqaba. They crossed the Red Sea. I mean, it just, please don't believe that stuff. If you see that, tell them not to send that stuff to you, because there are no chariot wheels that's going to be found in the bottom of the Red Sea. And it just, oh, I'm crazy. Okay, now, that was a commercial. Okay. Okay. What you hate commercials. All right, so Ezekiel 30, verse 13. Here is the big thing. What specific prophecy is made of Egypt? Yeah, now, of course, as we know, because we've dug Egypt up, full of idols, full of idolatry. Well, those are going to be gone, and there's not going to be any more of that. But specifically, he says that there will no more a prince from the land of Egypt. Now, here's the other little tidbit of information that you need to have. From 350 B.C., which is 350 years before Christ, that was the last time they had anything close to being an Egyptian. And what that means is that if you were doing a DNA test, the princes or the rulers or the presidents or whatever you call the guys who are ruling Egypt since 350 BC, none of them have been Egyptians. They've all nearly been Arab. God said that there will never be a prince from Egypt ruling over it because The only rulers that they've had have been foreigners, basically. And you're thinking, well, how does that happen? Now, that doesn't mean somebody's not born in Egypt, but they're still going to be, from Arabic descendants. And all of the guys, from Nasser to even Anwar Sadat that we talked about, Anwar was assassinated in 1981. He was an Arab. And all of the princes and the guy, I forgot what his name is now, not that it's on the tip of my tongue and I really care, but anyway, whoever the president of Egypt is today, he's not a prince. So what that's showing is that God's got his hand, and he says, okay, that's not going to happen. That he will never allow an Egyptian to be there. But then in the last one, became of the great nation of Egypt, according to Ezekiel 30 and Isaiah 19. Because it was the breadbasket, but now what is it? Folks, it's not even the basket. I mean, it is a very unproductive land. And as I mentioned Wednesday night, there was a friend of mine that was a security guard for a prince. This guy lived on this whole floor of a hotel. And he spent a lot of time in Egypt. And it is just an impoverished third world country. It's just a mess. And it's just the prophecy of God that the land will become less productive. And misery is generally the lot of most people that live there. If you look at Egypt, or if you visit Egypt, you're going to see a very impoverished, poor country. Yes, sir.
Let's not forget, Joseph and Mary took Jesus and lived in Egypt.
Yeah, and see, that's an interesting point, is that even in the life of Jesus, that God weaves in the story of Egypt, even in the life of Jesus. Because you remember when Jesus was about how old?
Two
years old. Who came to see him? Some wise men. How many of them were there? Please, thank you. Okay. I cringed. We don't know how many there were, but Jesus was about 2 years old and the wise men from the east. I don't know if you ever thought about this, and I'm suppositioning, but it's a good supposition. I think you'll agree. What did these wise men bring to Joseph and Mary and Jesus? Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And what happened right after that? They left by another way, and then what happened? Herod sent his soldiers and wiped out. But an angel comes and says to Joseph and Mary, go to Egypt. We have to remember Joseph and Mary were dirt poor. They couldn't have two shekels to rub together. I mean, they were so poor. So my supposition is that the providence of God was that he was going to send his son to Egypt, and the gold, frankincense, and myrrh paid the cost of the trip. Okay. I'm in trouble, right? Yeah. I've always thought that. I thought, well, that was timely. But anyway, because he stayed down there, they stayed down there for a few years. And so Jesus grew up in Egypt. Isn't that a wonderful story about how God puts all this together? And Egypt is still in the picture. And Jesus can say, well, I was born in Bethlehem, and then I lived in Egypt for a number of years. And then he went to Nazareth. And so that is just a beautiful providential hand of God, including Egypt one more time in the story of redemption. And there it is. So yeah, that's kind of cool to do. But they're going to become less productive. And in the year 2026, Egypt is never going to be a great nation again. Put this up Wednesday night. I looked this up last week. Egypt ranks 93rd out of 141 countries for providing prosperity to their citizens.
But they have the pyramids.
Huh?
But they have the pyramids.
Well, but see, they were done upside down. They were supposed to go the other way. They just, the contractor kind of met. But they have the pyramids. I mean, hey, listen. I got one elder here. I need to go check this out. So can I go do a trip and, just, He's laughing. Why is he laughing? But yeah, they have the pyramids. And so there's a lot of history that's there, but all that history points to the hand of God, actually. Daryl? You've been there?
Yeah. When I was in the Navy, I went 2 or 3 times.
Don't you hate people like that? He's been to the pyramids. Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Wait a minute. You're in the Navy and you go to the pyramids? That's like being in the Navy and being signed to Kansas. How did you get? No, I'm just kidding. Wow, I'm impressed. You're not going to. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Even around then, if the pyramids were in the United States, you have all kinds of.
Oh, yeah. Disney World.
It's a complete barren desert. Yeah. One little village there where you can go and buy trinkets.
Yeah. Yeah, if it was in America, there'd be a Bucky's right out front, you know. But, you know, but you would agree, I mean, since you've been there, yeah, I mean, your impression right now is the fact that even in something like that, it's still just desolate, bare, and poor, and...
When we went through the Suez Canal,
yeah,
right next to the canal, it was plush and green, but literally, right, you could look 500 yards off of it, and it was desert.
Yeah. Yeah, and see, that's so different from, and that's a great point, because it's so different from the days of Joseph, because if you think about a country, the country of Egypt basically is the Nile River and the Suez Canal.
Well, God gave them the land of Goshen, too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's up near the Mediterranean, and that was kind of odd that Pharaoh, well, it was Joseph, but the land of Goshen was the fertile, because the Nile flows from south to north, and that's the most fertile land there is, but that's still because it's in that delta. But basically, you're right, they live right along the Nile, and they built the Aswan, the Russians, you know, built the Aswan Dam thinking that was going to help. No, it messed it up. So, I mean, yeah, it's a great point, Daryl, is that, you know, it's just an impoverished land. You can go there today. That's the thing about fulfilled prophecy. If we go there today, if you go there, you'll think, and if you take your Bible, it's like, man, that's just what God said. It is an impoverished land. They're just not a very developing kind of land. And what I mentioned... Wednesday night, I mean, I believe strongly in the fact that, this was what was going on when you talked about President Carter and Menachem Begin and Anwar Sadat, is that they had the Camp David Accords and that Egypt was becoming a powerful nation. Not really powerful, but a big nation. Well, he got assassinated. Well, that was the hand of God, simply because... It's the prophecy that no matter who, if you want to be the head of a country and do something great, do not choose Egypt. You're going to die. Don't go try to rebuild Babylon. That's what happened to Saddam Hussein. You're not going to want to build Nineveh. We'll talk about that. And there's just places you don't want to go be. Because God has put these things into motion. And what is important about fulfilled prophecy is the fact that, yes, this was said 700 years before Christ, but it is still being fulfilled today. You're going to see that more Wednesday night in some ways, because Wednesday night, we're going to knock your socks off, so don't wear any. Because it is going to be an amazing thing come Wednesday night to see how specific and precise some of these prophecies are. It's going to be so cool. Daryl? Right.
But when you think about the death of the firstborn,
yeah,
we recognize how terrible it would have been to wipe out and all those deaths. But that destroyed their economy for decades, generations to come, because the firstborn, that part of the firstborn that died, were already the ones that owned all the businesses. And
yeah.
Things, and all the firstborn that were not yet that old were going to be the ones that were being raised to take over.
Absolutely. Yeah, great point, because not only the firstborn among the people, but the firstborn among the animals, you know. So if you had a poodle and it was the firstborn, he's gone, buddy, you know. But, but I mean, that's a great, never thought about that, is that when you think about what happened even in the 10th plague, that desolated, destroyed, absolutely annihilated any sense of power that these people would have. It makes you wonder how they even put together an army, because obviously there ain't no firstborn running around there. And that would have wiped out a whole percentage of an army, because... Yeah, at least. Yeah. Yeah, of every animal, of every human being, the firstborn, that was an economic disaster that was there.
2 points. One, it shows you, don't make yourself above God.
Right, yeah, and that's what the Pharaoh was trying to do.
And number two, God knows everything about everybody and everything because he knew what every firstborn was.
Yeah. That shows the power of God, because he specifically targeted only the Egyptians, because the Jews or the Hebrews did what God said. And so he was able to distinguish, it did, that, okay, this is a Hebrew house. I see the blood and the on the doorpost and the lintel. I will pass over, which is why it's called that. But then he went to every home, every little hamlet, every little village, every little whatever in the land of Egypt, and he said, firstborn. Firstborn, firstborn. And then he went through all the animals. Talk about the omniscience of God. And then the omnipotence of God destroyed the nation. Daryl.
You said, how could they raise an army? Well, I don't know for sure, but I would imagine Egypt was just like the other nations around them. And typically the firstborn weren't conscripted into the army because they were raised to take over the family possessions.
Yeah.
And it was the younger brothers and stuff that were
conscripted into the Yeah, that's good. That makes sense. Yeah, that's a good point. But God dismantled, and whenever you read about the plagues and the destruction of the army, he just basically dismantled it. And Egypt has never been a great nation today. But again, one of the reasons that prophecy is so important is because it's still being fulfilled today. We're going to see that even more. Okay, let's talk about Israel, lesson number 10, because God's got something to say about his own people, Israel, the nation of Israel. And so we're going to see that God made some specific promises about them. One of the things that is interesting is that we read about how things that happened to Israel and why did they happen and when did they happen. All of this was actually established when they were at Mount Sinai. And then later, as Moses recounts everything in the book of Deuteronomy after the 40 years wilderness wandering. But contained in those first five books is the history of Israel to this day. And the reason that we need to study Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy is because that is a testimony to what God said is going to happen to his own people now, mind you. It's not another nation. This is his own people. Because in Deuteronomy 28, particularly in Deuteronomy 28, 29, and 30, God offers a prophecy. And he does it between the mountains of Ebal and Gerizim. And on one mountain he gives curses and the other one he does blessings. And he basically says this: if you obey me, I will bless you like no, you cannot even imagine how I'm going to bless you. But that's about that long. And then he comes and he says, if you disobey me, I will punish you like you ain't never seen before. And it was about that long. Massive list. He tells them at the end of this, here's the deal. You've got a choice between life and death. And when you read Deuteronomy 28, 29, and 30, what you're actually reading is the history of Israel as we know it. Because what he said in that long list, that became their history. Not the short one, the long one. And the other thing is that sometimes when we're studying the kings and everything in 1 Samuel, we're shocked, that Israel wanted a king. Samuel was upset that they wanted a king. But God knew they were going to want a king one day. So the people desiring to have a king was actually not new, at least in the mind of God, because God tells them that they were going to have a king. In Deuteronomy 28, verse 36, God said you're going to have a king. Now, he warned them, don't do it, because the king is going to take your young men. He's going to take your money. He's going to enslave you guys. But the first king was Saul, and the second king was, and the third king, and all three of those ruled for how long?
40 years.
So really, the United Kingdom lasted for how many years? See, I mean, the United States is coming up on 250, but anyway, but so they had three kings, and then Solomon died, and the whole place went to pot. But God's got some things to say about them. So it's not new news, at least in the mind of God, that they wanted a king, and that was going to actually be their downfall. But what does Moses say? Now remember, Deuteronomy 28, Moses is sitting on top of the mountain. They have not crossed the Jordan River yet. They're about to cross the Jordan River. Moses is 120 years old, and, you know, so that's when he's writing this. What does Moses say is going to happen to Israel in verses 25, 36, and 41? Yeah, they're going to be whipped. Mm-hmm. They're going to serve other gods. They're going to go into captivity. That's what they're going to do. And what does God say that the nation is going to become like? This is sort of like with Egypt. But what Israel is to become what? Yeah. I mean, people are going to make fun of them. They were going to laugh at them. They were going to, you know, ridicule this great nation. Now, Israel is the greatest nation that literally has ever been upon the face of this earth. Now, it's a little tiny one, but it's the greatest because it had God as its ruler. And so God says, number one, they're going to be smitten, tossed to and fro. They're going to be a proverb. They're going to be a taunt. And as a matter of fact, it's not a surprise that the Assyrians would come up against Egypt. That was the first formidable nation that came up against them. And then the Babylonians came, and then the Persian Medes came, and then the Greeks came, and then the Romans. That's not news to God. He prophesied nations from afar are going to come against Israel, and that's exactly what happened. Later in the time of Jesus, when the Jews said that we've never been under bondage of anybody, it's laughable. You've been under bondage since the Assyrians, you know, in 722 BC came and took away the northern tribes. But this is what God said, and he also is specific about the kind of things that are going to happen to their cities in verse 52. What's going to happen to their cities? They're going to be besieged. And they're going to be destroyed. And all the archaeology in Israel today shows that's true. Everything is burned, broken down, and whatever. What terrible things would happen? Yeah. Great sufferings accompany the siege. Some would even eat their young children. God said, this is Moses writing before they crossed the sea. And we're not going to read that, but it's in your book. But if you read 2 Kings, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Lamentation, guess what? That's what they did. They're fighting over who's going to eat their boiled son. That's how bad it was. What would happen to the people, according to verse 64? The Jews. Yep, suffered beyond belief. They would be scattered. The Hebrews would be scattered everywhere, sold again into Egypt. See, we keep going back to Egypt. And Josephus, the Roman, a Jewish historian with the Roman army, says that that's exactly what happened. So the elements of the prophecy are this. Israel is to be scattered, but never consumed. They're going to be spread, you know, they're going to be all over the world. There would always be a remnant of the Jewish nation. There will never be a time until the day that Jesus comes back that there is not Jews upon the face of this earth. Romans 1:16 proves that as well. They will be scattered among the nations, but they will always remain a people. Because if you meet somebody today who is a Jew, they really are. Because they have the DNA that's in them. They don't know what tribe they came from. But the nation of Israel will never be a nation again. If you read Jeremiah, it's the imagery of the pottery being broken. And the people of Israel will always be here, but the nation will not. And the fact that today you've got Jews all over the world. And there will always be Jews all over the world. And the biblical nation of Israel, we've talked about this recently in a sermon, most people do not understand this, is that the biblical nation of Israel is not the modern nation of Israel, not even close. In the give me some characteristics of the biblical nation. What do you know about the biblical nation of Israel? They were not to intermingle with anybody else. Where was worship?
Temple.
And the temple worship, sacrifice, priesthood, and all of that. Well, that was the biblical nation. It was established under the law of Moses. They had a king. They possessed all the territory from the river Euphrates to the river of Egypt, which is Wadi El Arish, down in Gaza. And they had temple worship, priests of the tribe of Levi, animal sacrifices, and the tribes were identifiable. If you know somebody who is of the Jewish heritage today, they do not know what tribe they're from. Nobody does. That's gone. The modern nation of Israel is not even close. The modern nation of Israel has no king. They possess only part of the land. They don't have a temple. They don't have a priest. And they surely don't do the sacrifices. And it's just not there.
And verse 66 applies today.
And which verse, what does that say?
You shall hang in doubt before you. Your life shall hang in doubt before you. Night and day ye shall be in dread and have no assurance of your life.
Yeah, yeah.
That's happening even today.
Yeah, because Israel is a political nation and they're there, but as far as that nation is concerned, yeah, there's nothing that exists there. So it's important to remember that when people talk about the nation of Israel today, they're not talking about the same one. A remnant was restored to the land. Israel was to be scattered, but they could return. And we talk about the remnant that was taken under the Babylonian captivity. And the remnant returned from Babylon exile under the leadership of Joshua and Zerubbabel. You got that in the book of Ezra. And then that. Okay, Wednesday night, going to be fun. You're going to enjoy Wednesday night.